Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Ariana Pelosi. In May 2023, experts in the field of mantle cell lymphoma gathered for the Mantle Cell Lymphoma Scientific Consortium and Workshop hosted by the Lymphoma Research Foundation. During the consortium, leaders from all over the world presented topics like the tumor microenvironment, current clinical trial updates, and what to expect in the next 20 years. To get a better understanding of these topics, Cancer Network spoke with Elias Campo, Research Director and Professor of Anatomic Pathology at the Hospital Clinic of the University of Barcelona. Michael Wang, Professor in the Department of Lymphoma and Myeloma at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. Martin Drayling, Professor of Medicine in the Department of Medicine and Head of the Medical Clinic 3 at the University of Munich, Grasserdurm in Germany. And Julie Vos, Newman M. and Mildred E. Harris Professor, Division Chief, Division of Hematology and Oncology at the University of Nebraska Medical Center and Co-Editor-in-Chief of Oncology. Dr. Campo, during your presentation, you discussed MCL classification. Has there been specific research findings that have significantly impacted the understanding of MCL biology?
Yes. That was one of the findings that we did in our group some years ago now, in which we started to... The initial observations were clinical observations. When we started to study mantle cell lymphoma some years ago, it was considered to be a quite homogeneous and aggressive disease. But then there were clinical observations in which some patients, for different reasons, were identified in which the tumor was not so aggressive as was the general agreement on this type of lymphomas. And then what we asked ourselves was, are those the tumors in those patients that is behaving more indolently, not so aggressive, is just the beginning of the disease and then become very aggressive? Or is a second barrier of the tumor with a different biology and different molecular characteristics that configure this different clinical presentation and more indolent and slow evolution? And that's trying to answer this question, we set up a series of experiments some years ago, and that's what we have been substantiating more recently from different perspectives. The summary of these results was to propose that mantle cell lymphoma was not an homogeneous disease, but it was a disease in which we could identify two major biological subtypes of the disease with very different biological features, different cell of origin, and different clinical evolution that eventually both will end up with very aggressive disease. But at the beginning of the disease, the two subtypes were, one was very slow in terms of growing, progressing, and the other was faster. And in spite of these different biological characteristics, we identified that both subtypes had the same hallmark, genetic hallmark of the disease, that is the 1114 translocation and the cyclin D1 overexpression, that was the common thing. And that's what we still thought, that these were the same disease, but with two different pathways of evolution. So we think that it's important in all the clinical studies of the patients to know which of the variants of this disease the patient had, because that my patients with these different biological entities or subtypes of the disease might respond to different treatments and different based of evolution of the disease. So that's why we proposed, and has been now extensively accepted, that mantle cell lymphoma comes with two biological molecular subtypes.
Dr. Gerling, from your experience, what are the biggest differences between the US and Europe in the clinical practice setting?
I think when it comes to let's say the strategies, they're quite similar. However, we do have a different registration status. And here I specifically would like to refer to BTKI. Because in Europe, ibrutinib is the only registered BTKI, whereas in US, it was withdrawn from the market, at least for the indication of relapsed mantle cell lymphoma. But there you have acalabrutinib and zanubrutinib, both of them second generation BTKI. So what we assume is that the second generation BTKI are better tolerated, so their side effects are less. However, they are also efficacy, there is no major difference, let's say it that way.
Dr. Vose, during the conclusion of the consortium, a lack of diversity in clinical trial populations was discussed. Can you expand on that?
So a lot of our therapies and clinical trials are tested on patients that are perhaps able to come to the large academic centers. They have insurance, they have the means to be able to participate in these types of trials. Whereas the patient population that has a disease is not always representative in the clinical trials. So that's why it's really important to be able to have a diversity of patients in clinical trials to test these new therapies because they may have other medical conditions that would change the outcome of trials and not be necessarily representative of the entire patient population with that disease. So it's really important to try to advance the treatment in a very diverse patient population through these clinical trial mechanisms.
Dr. Wang, the use of surrogate endpoints was a concluding topic. Can you expand on what they are and why they are important?
Yeah, so we have many surrogate endpoint. The most clinical research, you know, if you do use the best good standard is overall survival. But if you use overall survival, you will wait for too many years, and you will slow down the clinical research. So we use the surrogate marker called a progression-free survival. This is an internationally recognized the surrogate endpoint instead of overall survival. And instead of overall response rate, right? Overall response measured how many patients would have a tumor shrunk, but you only, the tumor shrunk and you have to have their durability. So progression-free survival is a good summary of efficacy plus durability. That's why it is used all over the many, many clinical trials, especially the international phase three trials that use the progression-free survival. And I think it will continue to be a great surrogate marker for the clinical trials. The issue is that some of the phase three trials, they have significant progression-free survival trial efficacy. I'm sorry, the endpoint for progression-free survival is significantly different in terms of in favor of the treatment arm. However, the overall survival may not be different. That's the current issue, is that how much do we give the progression-free survival? How much we give the overall survival, right? Overall survival, no difference, and then progression-free survival significantly difference. And usually, if the overall survival is identical in two arms, the failure-free survival may not be meaningful. So if you have a overall survival not statistically different, but still in favor of the treatment arm, in this scenario, the progression-free survival difference will be very significant. That's the surrogate marker. Thank you.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology on the Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com /resources/podcasts. The Oncology on the Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter @CancerNetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn @CancerNetwork.